Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Story Blender. I'm Stephen James, and this is where great storytellers share the secrets of great storytelling. And today's guest, Kathleen Antrim, is not only an author, a passionate and skilled storyteller, but an encourager of other authors. She's involved with the leadership of the International Thriller Writers Organization, one of the premier writing groups in the nation. She's an expert on helping people shape pitches and log lines to meet with editors and agents. And Kathy, thanks for being here today. I'm excited to talk with you.
Thanks, Stephen. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, now, I know that your book, Capital Offense, has been out. Has it been out for a couple of years?
Yes, it's been out for a while, actually. I was a political commentator, and it's so funny because I get the rights back to that book periodically, and then every time a big election, like a presidential election, comes up, it gets bought again. So it's I know. It keeps going and going, and Amazon is actually currently promoting it, which is really nice.
Now, actually, one time you in one of these episodes when you were one of my guest hosts, which is wonderful, you mentioned the pitch for that book, and it was short, concise, to the point, and grabbed me right away. I'm like, I want to read this book. Tell us your pitch. What was your pitch for that book?
So the pitch for that book is, what if the First Lady is plotting to overthrow the president? And,
yeah. And I'm like, I want to read that book now.
Thank you. But I learned the structure of pitching from John Saul and in combination with Steve Barry. So it's kind of the what if and the so what. So in other words, what if this happens and why do I care? And from John Saul's really kind of structured way of pitching, it really gives you discipline in how to pitch a book, but also when you're thinking about what you want to write about next, it helps you define an idea and then decide if, A, you want to live with it for the next 2 years or so, and, B, will that idea actually sustain an audible? So it's an exercise I use regularly.
Very often when I'm writing a novel, people will say, well, what's your book about? And, you know, a lot of authors, when they talk to me about, like, pitching or, you know, well, here's what my book is about. I'm like, nobody wants to know what your book is about. They want to know what the struggle is. And So I always tell people to lead with the struggle in their pitches and stuff like that. In other words, like, you know, well, my book's about an FBI agent who, whatever. I'm like, no, already you can stop. You know, and so, but when I look at my novels, I mean, literally, I cannot do what you do. I can't look at a 500 or 600 page novel and find a way to distill it down like that. I'm always amazed when people do that. I've had others on the show who do log lines for Hollywood, and you'll tell them something, they'll come with this log line. Man, how'd you do that? So
well, it's really not easy. I mean, usually for me, I mean, I suppose like some people can pull it right out of the hat. And it's funny, when it's not my work, I am faster at it. But when it's my work, it's a much more arduous process. Like, it usually takes me a couple of weeks to be able to distill it. And I think it's because we're too close to it and we're emotionally tied to it. So, I mean, I'm sure you could do it, but, you know, if the book's already written and you're, you know, doing well with it, you probably don't need to spend time on that task.
Now, Kathy, at the Thriller Fest in the summer, I know there have been times where you've taught a class on how to actually do this, how to shape pitches, and I think you've often taught with John Land, who's another novelist, another excellent thriller writer. But what struck me is afterwards, you would go and say, okay, look, if anybody has any questions, you want to practice your pitch, come talk to me or whatever. And I literally remember one year where I saw you sitting there with a line of people, and for 4 hours, you sat there, listened to people, volunteered your time, helped them work and craft their idea. And to me, that's just like huge dedication toward, and nobody, you didn't have to do that. You taught your class, right? You were done. But you have a passion to help people be successful and tell great stories. And that is, that I love that. I love to see that.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it's funny, that time goes really quickly. You do get tired because you're thinking so hard, but when I only have 2 brain cells, so they rub together as hard as they can, but they get exhausted pretty quickly. But anyway, But you know, we all start at the same place. We're all that new writer in the beginning who is desperate to do well and desperate to learn. And you know, certainly the focus for me and all good writers is the craft of writing. But there is an aspect when you're trying to break into the industry where you need to also hone your skills interpersonally and are able to convey your ideas succinctly, not only to an agent or an editor, but then down the road to somebody who walks up when you're signing books and says, you know, what's your book about? So, you know, I am very passionate about helping those writers. And, you know, usually they're in a state of panic because that day, later that day, they're going to be pitching, literally like a speed dating situation to agents and editors. And you want to give them as much confidence as possible. So, yeah, it's an interesting exercise, and I have to say it's probably made me much better at pitching myself. You know, I think you learn more from teaching sometimes than you do from sitting in a classroom as the student. So,
you know, when you talk about pitching, log lines, and all this kind of stuff, but one of the questions that I think of is, to you, do you find that the story gives you the pitch or that the pitch gives you the story?
Well, for me, because I use this early on in developing the concept for a novel, it helps me develop the story. Not to say, I'm very flexible, though, in my writing. I do outline, and I do have that germ of an idea, and I always know how the book's going to end before I start a book. But I remain flexible through the whole thing, and the end result pitch may be different than how it originally started out, because to me, writing is like meeting some new friends at the coffee shop. You have these characters, and you meet them on day one, and you think you know what they're going to do and what's going to happen, and you have a sense of them as you have your first cup of coffee with them. But when you meet them every day over months and months and then years, you get to know them better. So that's why I think in a story, you have to be really flexible, because you can get halfway through your story and suddenly realize, golly, you know, what I thought that character was going to do the first day I met them over that first cup of coffee is definitely not what they'd really do now that I know them so much better and I've seen them live through other trials and tribulations.
Yeah,
so,
that's a great point. And, you know, I kind of try to remind people of that because so many authors are taught to write up the history of the character, like where he went to college and where his first date was and what his dog's name was and all this stuff. So they spend all this effort doing that, but none of that really matters. Like I tell people, you know, with my best friend, I don't know who he dated first or what high school he went to, but I know what he's passionate about. I know what he cares about. I know what he would go to the mat for. I know, you know, what he would do for his family, for his kids, what he believes in. And so, you know, all of those facts, I sometimes tell people, like, a character with an attitude is always more interesting than a character with a history. And so we're tempted, and we're tempted to kind of say, okay, here's this character, and we pre-plan it. But I like that you, as you're developing it, you remain responsive, even though you know the direction, you know where the story is heading. As you get to know those characters, you're like, oh, well, he would never say that. I have to, you know, adapt and go back and change. And
I think it keeps the story fresh for me, the writer. So, I mean, back in the day, you know, golly, I've been writing professionally for over 20 years now and journalistically as well as novel writing. And so, you know, back in the day, I tried all those methods. I tried doing the background on characters. I found that it still led to a flat character because it was artificial.
Yeah.
They weren't living, breathing, thinking characters. They were something, you know, they were a character on a page that I gave attributes to. So I think that although those might work for some people, I really think more what that does is it just causes you to write. And as we all know, the more you write, the better you get at it. But I think it can also cause you to procrastinate. Like, I'm the queen of procrastination on research. Because
I don't know about
research.
That, but
oh, my Lord, it's terrible. But anyway, and I think it can become another method of procrastinating where you have all these great Bibles about all these different characters, but you never actually write their story. So I think you have to be very careful about that.
Yeah, and I tend to think that people, once they've put the time into developing their their outline, or let's just say their history of the character, Bible or whatever, they're tempted to use it. And that's one of the biggest disadvantages. Like, you'll be reading a book and suddenly they'll dump all this information in about this character, where he went to college. Well, I'm like, who cares? This has nothing
right.
to do with, the story. And and it was interesting when you noted a minute ago that you always know kind of the ending as you get started with your story. And I'm not that way. I'm exactly the opposite. I've done, I think, 15 novels, and I've never known the ending of any of them as I've started the book. Now, a lot of times I have an idea. I think, I think it's going to go here. But almost always those ideas end up either being discarded or maybe move up to be like a mid-book climax, and then I build toward an idea that I hadn't even thought of. And,
sure.
Everyone has a different approach. And one of the things that's great about this show is we get to talk to people who are outliners, who are organic writers, who kind of do a little bit of both. And I think that, it's really important for people to experiment, try it out and see what actually works for you. Some people are like, well, it doesn't work for me. Oh, have you tried it? Well, no, but it doesn't work for me. I'm like, how do you know it doesn't work
for you? How do you know? Right. I
if you never tried
agree.
It.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
So true.
So.
I know myself. And when I say I know the ending, what I'm saying is that I know the final end result.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know how we're going to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that, it definitely morphs. Again, I stay very flexible with my outlines, and there comes a point when I even stop referring to the outline. So it's almost like I kind of just need to have that roadmap. It's like a security blanket that's going to take me across the country, but I may take some detours along the way, and I leave myself open to that. I have tried to write organically. I have a literary novel that is kind of a labor of love that's in a drawer right now, and I've tried to write that organically, and I inevitably write myself into a corner. It just, for whatever reason, I don't know if I'm just in a hurry to finish it, or I have no idea.
No,
I've really analyzed why,
but
I write right into a corner.
Now, you used to be the co-president of International Thriller Writers.
Correct.
And at the last ITW conference, my seminar was called How to Write Yourself Out of a Corner. So,
I'm going to buy that MP3 because they are for sale.
but anyway, for me personally, the best ideas for me have always come when I'm in a corner. Like, when I've written myself into a corner and I'm like, I have no idea where the story goes, and I continue to work at it and ask the questions that sort of unpeel that layer of the story, then I'm like, oh, wow, I could do this. I never even imagined that. People are like, how did you come up with the twist or something? I'm like, well, I wrote myself into a corner. I think one of the keys is, you get to that moment, you're like, I really don't know where to go with this. I think context is so crucially important. When I get into a corner, a lot of times I'll just print out the whole book. And I'll go to a coffee shop that's in another town, maybe an hour away from here or something.
Sure.
And I'll just get away from all distractions, right, and just start going through the book. Thinking about, okay, I know where that corner is coming. I mean, I know it, obviously, or
yes.
I wouldn't be there. And I'm always thinking, okay, how could I move the story past this moment in a way that no one will expect, but that they'll be satisfied with? It's kind of pivoting the story in a new direction. And I just continually press more and more questions against the book and trust the process.
That.
And so...
All right, I'm going to use that with my literary novel. I'm going to be dragging that out after I finish this historical thriller that I'm working on right now.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That my agent's waiting for.
the book I'm currently working right now takes place in Detroit, and one of the aspects of the book is there's someone leaving abandoned bodies in bodies in old abandoned houses, basically.
Oh, wow, okay.
And this is actually happening quite a bit in Detroit, especially gangs from Chicago are bringing bodies over and dumping them, because there's 80,000 abandoned homes in Detroit, so who's ever going to find them?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, toward the beginning of the book, there's a scene where I was like, okay, well, they've got to find a body in an abandoned house, right? I mean, to get the story rolling and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I started writing this scene. And I was like, okay, you got two kids, two teenagers or whatever, outside this house. And one guy says to his buddy, he's like, do you have the pills? He's like, yeah, I got them from my mom. She never counts them. Are the girls waiting inside? He's like, yeah, they're inside. Come on, let's go. So and the whole goal of this scene was for me to, write a scene where these two guys find a body. So as I'm working, the reason I'm telling you this story is because I think it does fit in with this whole idea of writing ourselves out of corners.
Sure.
I started asking myself, well, what would readers expect at this point in the story? Well, they're probably going to expect that they find a body. I mean, they read the back cover copy of the book, and that's what they're going to expect. I was like, so I can't do that.
Right. Okay.
I can't do what they expect. I've got
Can
to do something different.
Can you tell us what you're going to do?
And so they go in, and the one boy looks around, and he sees these satanic symbols in the living room, like drawn on graffiti, upside-down mm-hmm. crosses and pentagrams and goat's heads and stuff. He's like, we need to find the girls and get out of here. The other guy's, you're being a pussy. Come on, let's go. Let's find them.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, call Janine or something. So he taps the phone, and the boy, kind of whose point of view we're in, Eric. Anyway, he sees a phone on the table, kitchen table. They go over, and it's ringing. And he's like, is this Janine's phone? And his buddy's like, something's going on. Something's wrong. So all of a sudden he calls, Janine, where are you? And they hear these muffled sounds from the basement.
Okay.
So as I'm writing the scene, I'm thinking, this is really interesting. Like, I don't know who's down there or what's going on. And I'm like, but this is really interesting to me. So I'm asking, what would be believable? How can I make things worse? And how can I add that twist? Those questions always pressing in. And so, anyway, they come to the stairs, and they start going down the stairs, and Eric's friend whips out a knife. He's got the flashlight. They come down. They see this candlelight. There's 12 candles. And Janine, one of the girls, is laying there on her back, her eyes closed. She might be asleep. We don't know. The other girl has her hands tied behind her back on this pole, and so she's got a gag, and she's trying to say something. So anyway, Eric, this boy's sister's friend, give me the knife, I'll free her, go wake up Janine, right? So he runs over to this other girl and takes the gag off, and she says, hurry, hurry, before he comes back, you have to get me out of here. And so again, as I'm writing this, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right, right.
Like, I don't know what the bad guy is or what's going on. I was like, but again, asking those questions, well, how could I end it? So anyway, he finally frees her, and he looks over, and his friend's patting Janine's face like, wake up, wake up, wake up. So finally he frees her, and he helps this girl to her feet, and she screams, behind you. He whips around, and his buddy jumps forward and says, gotcha. And the girls start laughing like, oh, ha, 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 or whatever. And so I was like, but I can't do that because it would seem like a cheap trick. Like,
right.
It would seem like de-escalation.
Right.
And so then I'm like, but then as he turns around, the boy who jumped him, it was like a setup or whatever. But anyway,
right,
the guy
right.
jumped him, he looks down, and the boy, Eric, was still holding the knife when he jumped at him and has buried it all the way to the hilt in his stomach. And so
God. Okay.
And so he's like, dude, you stabbed me or whatever. And he collapses to the ground. The girl starts screaming. And the boy's like, call 911 quick. We have to. So anyway, that's the scene I ended up with. But my goal was they have to find a body in a house.
Right.
And that's what I ended up with. I was like, crap, they didn't even find a body.
They created a body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Anyway, that's the scene. And I thought, well, it's a really interesting scene. It's got sort of intrigue, and it sort of seems like it might be just a joke, but then it's not, and there's a twist, and there's escalation. And so for me, it's always this process of continuing the questions, always
right.
looking at, what would readers expect? Let's not give them that, Oh, we have to escalate the tension, so we can't just have it be a joke and then move to the next chapter. Something's got to go worse. And anyway, when I talk to, writers and working on books and writer's block or whatever, for me, a lot of it is, what questions are you asking of the story at this moment? And
mm-hmm.
a lot of times that leads to revelations that they hadn't even discovered.
I think that's so true. And for me, it's funny, we all have our process, right? And for me, it's basically living in the head of the character.
Like, how can you write this stuff, from the killer's perspective or something? And I do just what you just said. I try to climb into that character's head and say,
yep.
what would he naturally be thinking, or what would he naturally be doing or saying? And then I let him do it without restraint.
Which is critical.
Yes, and it's
which is
so
critical.
Scary sometimes.
I mean,
they start
to
do stuff, you're like, holy crap, you know, this guy scares
me. I mean, I've read your work.
Me.
I mean, you know, there's one book with primates. Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
Yes,
yes,
I remember that.
It's,
yeah, there's
it's
a
some
scene.
Creepy stuff. You get down and dirty with it, which is just riveting. But, yeah, you have to be willing to go there in
yeah.
order to write riveting stories. And if you're not, then your work is never going to resonate, I don't think. You have to really, and I don't mean just in evil, serial killer, whatever type ways, but even in just emotional books or, you know, books about family interaction, you have to be really ready to get down into the real stuff at the bottom of everything. You can't just gloss over it and, you know, expect to have a resonating book, I think.
Yeah. If we're not honest, people will see through that immediately.
Yep.
If we're not honest about life, but also not honest about what the characters would naturally, you know, be doing. So if we start with an agenda and let that agenda shape the story, I think, the story will suffer. I took my kids back in the day to go see this movie Brave from,
okay.
I think, Pixar or Disney or something. And anyway, there's a scene in the story where it finally comes to the end, and the one character says to, like, the protagonist, "You just need to follow your heart." And literally my kids just started laughing out loud. And
right.
we're the only ones in the theater who are laughing, and they looked at me, I'm just shaking my head, because, you know, like, I write these books, and guess what? Pedophiles follow their heart. Serial killers follow their hearts.
That's
Hitler
right.
followed his heart. The secret is not to follow our hearts. It's to find something bigger than our hearts and follow that. Like, and so, you know, this cliche shapes the story, and it becomes comical because it's not true about life. In life, a lot of times when we follow our hearts, we find that we're more lost than ever. We need to find deeper truths, and our hearts will lead us astray sometimes. So anyway, I think that an honest story would be one where they refute the cliche, where
right.
someone says, just follow your heart, and someone else is like, really? You trust your heart?
And isn't it interesting that even your children saw that lie?
Yeah, I mean, they just laughed, and because it's such a common, mm-hmm. I mean, almost no Disney movie comes out where that's not like the theme of the movie.
Right.
But
I mean, the way they did it was so trite that
exactly. Yeah.
And I find that writer's block usually comes from telling a lie. And
yeah.
so I go back into the context, like you were talking about, you know, pulling the book out and rereading it and looking for the lie. Why do you think
those lies come from? Like, why do you think we insert those lies?
I think for me, it's being lazy. Not realizing it at the time that I'm being lazy, but when I go back, I go, oh, my gosh, this is ridiculous. You know, it was the easy out. It was not asking those tough questions. It was, you know, maybe that day I was tired, and I thought I was, you know, really digging in, but I wasn't. And so I really think that that's why they happen. I think it's doing something that is just way too surface. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it comes from when we plot, if people plot out a book, they kind of know, oh, well, I need to get him to move to L.A. for the next scene to
sure.
happen. Right? And so all of a sudden you're reading, you're like, what? He's packing up to L.A.? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Why would he do that? His girlfriend's here or whatever it is. And it's because that author has decided beforehand, I need this to happen for my plot. And then they end up with these gaps in logic and believability.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that sometimes happens is we impose our political maybe agenda or whatever, maybe not just politics, but our agenda on
moral,
on a character
what have you.
Right,
yeah.
to make a point, you know. And, you know, people are reading the story or they're watching the film or something. They're like, I don't think he'd really say that or something.
Right.
And they kind of get it right away
that
we're just, it's agenda-driven.
When I read a book that's agenda-driven, I usually put it down. I find that highly annoying. For example, I have a political thriller out right now, and I've done a lot of book clubs with the book, and I will always ask the book club at the end, can you tell what side of the, you know, political spectrum I fall on. And inevitably it comes up half and half.
One side, and then I
feel like I've done my job, because I never want to preach in a book. I never want to have an axe to grind. To me, that is, you know, if you want to do that, then write something nonfiction, you know, write commentary. But in fiction, I think it's really important to stay neutral. Maybe you're going to show both sides of an argument. Maybe there's, you know, something that you do want to pick up in popular culture. But your own personal view should definitely stay out of it, I believe.
Yeah. Recently, my wife and I started watching a television series in which there's a president, and he's a Democrat. And I started thinking back to, like, shows that have had presidents that have – I can only think of ones that had Democrats. And, you know, you've worked, I think, in Hollywood a little bit, and like – kind of the zeitgeist or whatever of Hollywood is very much more liberal than most of the U.S. And so
I think
that part of it is just reflective of they're like, I just don't know that I can write a believable Republican that I could believe in, you know, and so they just kind of default to Democrat. Now, I'm not saying Democrats or Republicans, I'm not saying whatever you believe.
Right.
That's not my point. But
it's irrelevant, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but my point is really that in – a Hollywood, which would be a bastion of people saying you should have free thinking and free ideas and, you know, expression and stuff, is very much the opposite. It's very hard to make it if you're a conservative. I've had people in Hollywood say, yeah, it's the death of your career if you start to, you know.
And I've heard the same thing. And actually have known some actors that if I were to say their names, you would know who I'm speaking of. Who are conservative, and everybody has a right to their own views, but literally are in the closet with it because they want to work. So it's really, it's an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, it's not,
we're very tolerant as long as you believe what we do.
Yeah, it's not healthy for, you know, for storytelling, for filmmaking or novel writing or any of this to have that kind of a skewed perspective. I mean, it's healthy to have both sides, like in your story, maybe both sides of the argument or both sides of the political spectrum. We show maybe the weaknesses, the strengths, and you let people, you know, I look at stories as really a way to explore some of these issues. It's not to beat someone over the head with whatever agenda you might have, but it's instead to really make people think, you know, about things that matter.
You know, years ago I studied under an author by the name of Bryce Courtney. He wrote The Power of One, and was pretty well-known international author. And he's from Australia, and he would say, what's your mongrel? And what he meant by that is what's that thing that just bugs you? And you'll find that most of your work will, not most, he would say all of your work will really boil down to what your mongrel is. And for me, it's moral bankruptcy. And so interestingly, you know, like when my book Capital Offense, it really does boil down to moral bankruptcy. It's not political. It's about people. It's about power and misuse of power and you know, how people react and interact in those kinds of settings and what their agendas are. And has nothing to do with, you know, political parties.
So now is the mongrel kind of like your pet peeve, or is it the issue that grabs you? Or
It's not really a pet peeve as much. I mean, it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that most disturbs you about human nature. And, you know, how far people will go. And as we were talking about earlier, I'm single and dating, and I'm always, I overanalyze things, and I think that's why I'm a writer, is I want to know, why do people do what they do? Why do they say what they say? What is it that motivates, we were talking about a gentleman that I had a date with and later found out that most of what he told me was lies, and he made up a whole story about himself, and it was just crazy, and it just niggles at me. I want to know why. Why would somebody do that? And I think that's what drives me to write, is exploring human nature.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so to me, that's probably a form of immorality that he would basically, for whatever reason, insecurity, whatever, but would make up an entire story about himself that's not accurate and tell it to someone and actually try to date under those pretenses. But again, when you look at it, it kind of still boils down to that same germ, right? That the people do things and that aren't just aren't right. And why do they do that? So I don't know, with your writing, it'd be interesting to maybe scary to figure out what it is that is driving you or what's the bottom line kind of point of your books.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really ever start out with an agenda. I more often start with a moral dilemma. So, in other words, one of my books was, what's more important, truth or justice? And another was, what keeps me from doing the unthinkable? Another was, what would it take for me to step over the line and really do the unthinkable? And so, to me, these are interesting questions. So I don't start with, like, a point I'm trying to make. But instead really explore, you know, these dilemmas or these interesting questions, you know, through the story. So it isn't so much a moral message, but it's more of, you know, a moral quandary or dilemma. And
yeah, but it boils down to the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how far would you go? What is more important? Where are the boundaries in morality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's acceptable and under what circumstances? Because you can ask all those questions, and under certain circumstances, they're going to be much more acceptable than others, right?
Yeah, I think that all stories that matter ask big questions. And if we're going to, you know, be storytellers that really impact people and tell stories that will make a difference, they will tackle some of these issues. And you know, I think it's kind of, you know, cowardly in a certain sense to try and tell stories and make a lot of money or whatever, but really not address anything that really matters, or just to beat someone over the head with an idea like, oh, be true to yourself or follow your dreams or whatever, which
right.
is kind of cliched and shallow advice. It doesn't
and
really.
Do you find when you go to movies that you're looking for that, and then you do kind of, that's a barometer by which you will judge either a television series or a movie that you go see in the theater?
I guess I just don't like cliches, you know. And so,
sure.
if whatever story it is, if it's a novel, I was reading one novel and I was like, about 100 pages in, I was like, oh, I can see the symbol with this virus or whatever is unforgiveness, and we should forgive people, right? Not carry grudges or whatever. Well, guess
right.
what? 350 pages later, guess what? The main point of the story was, we need to forgive, you know, not. And so that just drove me crazy. Like, I'm
right.
ready to throw this book against the wall. That's not what I come to stories for. Now, it's fine to explore that issue of forgiveness. That's certainly a valid, you know,
yes.
issue to examine in a book. But like, if you make it clear that you just have this agenda early, then
and then, of course, you read the whole book and spend the time because you want to find out if you're right, and then you find out you're right and you're so frustrated because you spent that time and it was so blatant.
Yeah, I sometimes tell people in my seminars that readers want to predict how a book will end, but they want to be wrong. And
yes.
So we kind of have this natural bent, like, I think I know where things are going, but if they go there, we're kind of like, oh, that was too predictable. Even
right,
though
right.
that's what we were doing was predicting it, because that's what we wanted to do.
But there's a moment of superiority where you kind of go, oh, I was right. But then there's the disappointment.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
But then there's the disappointment. Yeah, darn, I was right. That was kind of uninteresting. But that moment where you get to the point and you go, oh, my gosh, I was wrong. How cool.
Yeah, that's what we want. That's what we're shooting for, I think. Now,
right.
Now, Kathy, over the years, you have helped to develop and grow Thriller Fest, which I've mentioned before in this program because of my involvement as a thriller writer and teacher there and so on. But you've been able to meet some of the top-tier, really, authors in suspense and thriller and action all from all over the world, really. What would you say are some things that you've either taken away from them or the seminars that you've attended that would be really maybe insights for aspiring writers, I guess, you know, from your interaction with some of these people, what's your takeaway that we could apply?
Well, I would have to say I have a lot of takeaways, but one would definitely be that the joy of a writer is in the journey. It's, at least for me, it's not the end goal isn't getting published. I mean, obviously we all want to be read, and getting published is wonderful, and that's great. But for me, the joy is in the craft and the learning and always being on that learning curve and getting to go to seminars and conferences like ThrillerFest and just learning how differently every writer looks at things and taking those nuggets away of how they might view, you know, a conflict or point of view or how they handle different things and in the craft. So, you know, I've been so blessed and so fortunate because I have been able to study under so many writers, and I think that I've gotten nuggets of information from all of them. And I suppose in a way all of us do that, and that's what makes us such unique writers, right?
Yeah, I love, though, that aspect of teachability, that even some of these, you know, authors, filmmakers, screenwriters, you know, who've maybe hit it big in a certain marketable or financial aspect, you know, the ones that are really going to make a difference are the ones that remain teachable. And
sure.
We've had many of them on this show. You know, we've talked to them, and they say, look, I'm still learning, and I'm still, you know, working at my craft, and I'm desperately trying to grow and change. And, you know, as soon as you find someone who thinks he's got it all figured out, you can be pretty sure that he's not going to be maturing as a writer.
That's right.
As a storyteller.
And I agree. I think that might be one of the biggest nuggets right there, is that once they think they have it all figured out, their work suffers, I think, dramatically. You know, they're just phoning it in at that point. And I think that one of the biggest things for me was learning that writers like yourself who have 15 books, 20 books, what have you written, still have the same fears. It never gets easier. It's still just as hard to sit down in front of that blank page. And that's really freeing to know that, oh, it's not just because I'm a newer author, or it's, you know, it's not just because I have only a couple books under my belt. It's because that's our life.
Right.
And I think that's very freeing and comforting to know that this is just part of the process.
Yeah, I like that it is a process. And so many people today, they want a product. They want to get their book done. They want to get it published, self-published,
right,
or whatever. They want to get it to an agent and an editor. And, you know, I was at an event teaching a couple months ago, and this woman came up to me, and she had this idea, and you know, she's like, well, I've got my website, and I'm working on my marketing campaign and my Twitter handle and all this. I was like, well, you know, is your book done? She's like, no, I've got like 10 chapters done, but I'm planning to get it done by September or something. And I'm like, slow down.
Interesting, yes. Interesting.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
And she was hiring a marketing person. Like, she was going to self-publish her book, right? And I was like, you don't even know what the title will be yet. She goes, oh, I already know the title. I'm like, just write your book. Don't get ahead of yourself with all of this, you know, this marketing and everything. It's like, we want this product. And I guess the more that you talk to people who are really, really gifted and making a difference in the storytelling world is, certainly they want a great product at the end, but they're more interested in the quality of it, in the process of it, in the developing of it, and not just in churning stuff out and throwing it out there every couple months.
That's right, and I think that it can be very embarrassing to do that, quite frankly, and I think oftentimes new writers don't realize that because they're not at a place to really unbiasedly look at their own work. And later, as they get better at writing and better at craft, they're going to look back and regret that maybe they prematurely put work out there. And so I always tell new writers, you know, don't be in such a hurry. Like this lady, I mean, she really, you know, it's interesting to me. Why not just focus on your craft and be the very best you can be at what you truly want to be, which is a writer, if in fact that's what you want to be. If you want to be an entrepreneur who's going to be, you know, really focused on marketing and social media and all those things, then go be that.
Right.
Don't worry about writing then. Just go be that and do that for others, because that's really, you know, putting the cart before the horse, and that's not, to me, what it means to be a writer. To me, it's all about story. Whether anybody else ever reads it or not, I need to be really proud of what I've done, and
yeah,
I need to be entertained.
Yeah, sometimes people ask me, well, how do you know when your book's done? And I'm like, really, there's two answers. Number one is when I can't put it down. Mm-hmm. And number two is when I can't improve it. Like, if it comes to a place where I know I can improve it, well, why on earth wouldn't I improve it? Like,
right.
If I know that there's a weakness in it, I should fix it. And if it's so engaging that even though I know the ending, I can't put it down, to me, that's when the book is ready.
Yep.
It's not ready when I've gone through three drafts or five or whatever people do with counting it. It's like, does it thrill me, engage me, and is it to the place where I can't improve it? Then it's ready for me.
Absolutely, and you know that changes depending on where you are in your evolution as a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know myself, in the beginning, I would ask that question, and I wouldn't really know the answer because I wasn't at a place in my development in craft to really be able to answer it yet. Now I know because I can ask those questions you're asking.
Yeah.
And I know, can I still, because if you can still improve it, you're right. You need to make the changes. You know,
yep.
You don't let it pass.
Put the hard work in. And so, Kathy, one of the things, before we close up, one of the things I know you've been involved with is working with some of the thriller writers, many of them who attend and teach at Thriller Fest, but also doing programs for troops overseas. And I just think that's a great, you know, program that you guys do. I want you to tell us just a little bit about that, or maybe how
Sure.
we can even support it. What are you guys trying to accomplish with that?
So what we do is we actually work with the USO, which, you know, started back in the days of Bob Hope, and we have a partnership. International Thriller Writers has a partnership with the USO, and we put together tours where authors go overseas. I've been to the Middle East twice and to Europe another time, and we entertain the troops just like any other, you know, genre of entertainment would. And we really it's such an amazing experience because our troops are, first of all, flabbergasted that anybody would come to these areas to see them and entertain them. And one would think that it's about promoting our work, but it isn't at all. It's really about seeing them. They often do demonstrations for us of, you know, all the things that they do and how they've trained. And, I mean, I've seen the bomb guys show us their robots and what have you, because they don't have those days where they can take their kids to work and show them what they do.
Yeah.
So, it's really fascinating. But it's such a gratifying thing to get to go over and give them some respite from their tour of duty, especially in the Middle East where there's really not much else to do. A lot of our troops do read, and many of them have stories that they want to tell. And so not only do we talk about, you know, characters that they know and books that they've read and, you know, our books, but they want to know, how do you write a book? And how does a book become a movie? And so, you know, we actually get into craft with many of them because they're interested in either journaling or going forward with a career in writing. So it's really an amazing experience, and we're going to continue that partnership. The way to support it would be to donate to the USO.
Okay, great, yeah.
Yeah, and to, you know, maybe write on the check that you'd like it to go to the author program. And, we'll be doing a series of tours coming up in the next couple of years. And who knows what hot spots will be happening around the globe. But, you know, if they say go, I'm there. So.
Well, hopefully not too many. But the way things are going, you never know.
You never know. So
yeah.
One can only hope that things will calm down. So we'll see.
Well, Kathy, that's fantastic. Anyway, thanks for sharing today. And, you know, just not only from, you know, your experience, but also from your heart and some of these things that you're passionate about. And just the stories that you tell, really exploring these issues of morality that are issues I think we all need to wrestle with and that really make us better people in the end.
Well, I think most books should reflect in popular culture and what's going on in our world, unless, of course, you're writing historical stuff. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank you so much, Stephen, for having me. It's been just terrific to be here.
Well, thanks. Kathy, where should people connect with you online? Where's the best place?
Facebook, Kathleen Antrim. That's A-N-T-R-I-M. It's Kathleen with a K. And Facebook's the best place to find me. I'm on it every day. Love
and
to hear
please,
from people.
Yeah, please check out Kathy's books. And for info about my writing intensive retreats, please click to novelwritingintensive.com. And for more shows and guests and bios on all of our other guests and co-hosts that we've had, go to thestoryblender.com. And always remember, the art of the story is all in the blend. See you next time.